Hello. Thank you. So yes, this is our time when we're looking at the Hindu and yogic teachings of the Bhagavad Gita and also other yogic teachings. We're looking at the yamas and niyamas at the minute. And tonight we're going to look at asteya, which is non-stealing. But before we get going on that, we're going to have our consecration. So that's just our opportunity to offer up our time together for the benefits of others, just to bring our awareness into sort of more than just ourselves. So, or rather, sort of expanding our awareness out towards others rather than just ourselves. So, as always, we're just going to start by, maybe just closing the eyes and beginning to relax the shoulders, maybe the face, feeling ourselves root down into the ground. Maybe that's through the soles of the feet or through the tailbone into the chair. And then becoming aware of the breath moving in and out of the nostrils. And as we begin to focus the mind, and then moving that awareness up through the breath, up and over the skull, and dropping down into the heart center. And from here, we're just going to make our offering, our yajna, our consecration. So, whatever words work for you, but just offering up our time together, even our entire day, may we be of service to others. May everything we hear and say be of service to others. May all beings be healthy. May all beings be happy. May all beings be at peace. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, peace, peace, peace. And then we'll just take a deep inhale and open the eyes. So yeah, we are looking at the yamas and niyamas, which, if you're not familiar with them, are yoga's sort of guidelines. The 10 commitments, I call them. They're just guidelines of observances and ethics to look at on the path of yoga. Or they're more than to look at, really, they're a commitment. And the first two limbs of yoga are the yamas and niyamas. And we're looking at these because within the Bhagavad Gita, which we've talked about a lot, some of them are mentioned, not all of them, but some of the yamas and niyamas are mentioned. And they're mentioned in different ways, often as sort of qualities that one seeking an awakening or self-realization, qualities that they would have, that person. So we looked at ahimsa, non-violence, and sort of delved into a bit compassion from that. And then last week we looked at truthfulness, satya, and talked a bit about that. And this week we're going to look at asteya, which means non-stealing. So asteya isn't actually mentioned by word within the Bhagavad Gita, but it does come up a few times mentioned when it's sort of mentioned about not taking from others and about the role of giving and taking. And we're going to talk about that a bit later. As with all the yamas, one of the great things about them is that we can practice them. That's the whole point of the yamas. And the yamas in particular, we've talked about this before, they help us with practice in the material world. So the yamas really are guidances and things to sort of look at that can help us on our spiritual path or in our path of yoga, but really in relation to others and in the world. And then the niyamas, which we'll touch on in a few weeks, they're about sort of moving within and sort of taking the spiritual journey within. But the yamas are great because it really does give us this sense of practice. And there are two words for practice in Sanskrit, and that's abhyasa, and the other is sadhana. And we've talked about sadhana before, and sadhana really means your practice in terms of what are the tools that you're employing in your spiritual practice off the mat and on the mat. So maybe that's meditation or breath work. Perhaps if you're into yoga, it's your asanas. It can also be the tools that you use when you're out in the world. So maybe nonviolent communication would be part of your sadhana. And then also, if you make it a practice to always give money to those who ask you for money, that would be part of your sadhana. But abhyasa is much larger than sadhana. Abhyasa is really sort of making yoga and your spiritual path your life. And abhyasa essentially means making the choice to move towards self-realization, awakening, an open heart, opening, expansion, God, the divine, whatever it is that you want to use for that word. Abhyasa is the choice you have in every moment to move towards that. So when we talk about our day from, you know, our practice, when we're talking about abhyasa, it means all those things that maybe don't involve meditation or breathwork or prayer, or whatever it is, those tools, it's just as things come up to us in the day, abhyasa is when we manage to stop and make the choice to move towards our goal of happiness or peace or, and say, God, divine expansion. And the yamas really sort of feed into that, and sort of breaking them down helps us to reflect and remember during the day, oh, okay, well, you know, I've come up against this obstacle. I guess I could pull from the yamas what maybe I can do now. So they're really beautiful in the abhyasa part of our practice. So asteya never really sort of thrilled me as one of the yamas, and I really do love the yamas, because to me it felt very obvious, like non-stealing. And it was only once I started delving down into what non-stealing really means that I began to fall in love with it as a practice. And really, like ahimsa, when we talked about ahimsa, which is non-violence, this non-stealing is so much more than the superficial level. As you know, when we talked about ahimsa before, we were looking at how non-violence we can perceive in its grossest form of, you know, not being violent in the world, not hitting another, and then moving into the subtle realms of not having violent thoughts and speaking without violence. And asteya is much the same. So essentially, asteya on the most basic level is not stealing items from people. That's it. So most of us would say, well, okay, well, I don't need to worry about asteya because, you know, I'm not a shoplifter, or I don't make a habit of taking other people's money and not giving it back. But it goes a bit deeper again. So when we start to contemplate asteya, we're really being asked to look at what we are taking that isn't ours. And when it comes to other people, that can even mean borrowing. So I don't know about you, but I have a few books on my bookshelf that don't belong to me. And according to asteya, that is stealing, the fact that I borrowed these books and have yet to give them back. So I'm always quite aware of looking around my bookshelf and trying to notice what I've got that needs to go back to others. It's also, Swami Sachidananda says it's even, we think about asteya, if we were to buy two pairs of jeans instead of one. He says that buying more than we need counts as stealing things by not letting others have them. So some really sort of begins to get a bit more subtle the way that we're stealing from others. And of course, the question that keeps coming up, as we're encouraged to do with all of the yamas, is not to judge ourselves for these things, but to just ask ourselves why we're doing them. Why haven't we given back the book? What is that? Is it that we want the book as to be ours, in which case why aren't we just buying the book? Is it that we don't have enough respect for the other person, perhaps, or we don't think, or we put ourselves above them? It's always being asked to think about some of those things we're doing. And it's not just items that asteya looks at, it's also time. So when we're late, when we arrange to meet a friend and then we turn up 10, 15 minutes late, perhaps you're that person, perhaps you know people who are those people. It's considered stealing because we're stealing time from someone else. There's a time that they're not able to use doing something they would have chosen to do. Also, when you're thinking about stealing in a stare, it's things like, you know, maybe you're clocking out at 4:54 every day instead of 5 p.m. Are you stealing from your employer in time? It can be things like, are you maybe doing a few cash jobs that you're not declaring to the IRS in a stay? You would be stealing from the rest of your country by not paying your taxes. So I say lots of ways to think about how we steal. But it's also we steal from others in our judgments of them. So I just wanted to read to you some thoughts by Deborah Adele. I think it's Adele, it could be Adele. In her book, The Yamas and Niyamas, which is a really great book, but she talks about stealing from other people. So she says, an outward focus leads us to compare ourselves to others and to send our energy into their lives in unhealthy ways. When we compare ourselves to others, we can find ourselves lacking, which makes us feel cheated, or we find ourselves superior, which leaves us feeling somewhat arrogant. Our attention on others from this place of discontent within ourselves can lead us to live vicariously through others, or to try and control, manipulate, or manage them in order to boost our own sagging ego. So this is how we can steal from others more subtly. We may find ourselves trying to one-up their stories and successes and experiences by coming behind them with our own more fabulous tales. It is really all an attempt to make ourselves feel better about ourselves. Perhaps someone is sharing their excitement about an upcoming trip, and then we immediately pipe in with a much more exotic trip that we've planned. Or maybe we say we've already been where they're going. Either way, the conversation then becomes about us and our trip, and we have stolen their excitement about their own trip. We do the same with others' successes. We can even do it with death. For example, if someone's mother has passed and we shift the conversation to our story of losing our own mother, we are making the situation about us instead of being present for the other person. We can also steal from others by not paying attention to them or discounting them, sort of brushing over them and not valuing their opinion. In all the instances where we steal, we have made the situation about us and not the other. Have or haven't come out of our mouths, the intent has been to serve ourselves and not the other. When we feel unhappy with ourselves or our lives, we have a tendency to drag people down with us or make snide comments that come from jealousy. Emotion or action, depending how you look at it, involved in a stare is envy. When we envy others, we sort of are denying them their right to joy. So we're taking away from them in our envy. On the other hand, when we are genuinely caring of another, that caring finds expression in ways that feel supportive and tender to the other. And she says, when I was training with Yogi Bhajan, he used to say, be a forklift. You should always be lifting people up. The question we can ask ourselves in our encounters with others is, does the other person feel uplifted and lighter because they've been with us? Or do they feel like something precious was taken from them? Did we brighten their day by taking a moment to listen, to compliment them, to sort of acknowledge them, or simply to smile? So it's this whole sort of sense of taking from others in any way, shape, or form. Another thing that's mentioned is if you used to steal ideas and then present them as your own, that would be taking from others, sort of taking credit where credit isn't due. And just so I'm adhering to a stayer, this was mentioned by Swami Karunananda via Jessica Sunshine Klein of Sunshine Yoga Life on her website, that particular thing. Again, when we look at all the ways we're taking from others, really the reason we do look at this and the yamas are really just an invitation to look at what we're doing, what we're telling ourselves and our interactions with others in order to learn more about ourselves. We do this because we're really just so self-involved. It's always about me and mine, and I'm more important. You know, when we steal from another person, we're essentially saying, I deserve this more than you. When we envy another, we're saying, you don't, as I mentioned, you don't deserve this right to joy, and I don't believe that. You know, if we maybe don't give a book back, what does that say? That we think we're more important than our friend, that we need the book more. If we purchase two pairs of jeans, like we mentioned, is it saying that, oh, we don't care about another person having those jeans? Or being late, we're not respectful of another person's time. We consider our time more important than theirs. So it always comes back to, you know, what is this yama really trying to shed light on? And it's trying to shed light on our selfishness. And how we are really identified with ourselves, and we put ourselves first. And one of the big teachings we've come across time and time again is the whole Gita, really, is this idea of that you have to, not have to, but the path of yoga is one of letting go of the self and putting others first all the time, and sort of letting God move through you and letting go of all your attachments. So Asteya really is sort of this sort of essence of the Gita. And I know we've talked about this before, but while there are all these yamas, there are five different ones. Really, once you start to drill down into one, you hit up against all the others. So even if you just take one of them rather than try and excel at all five at once, if you just took Asteya, in the end, when you drill down and you realize all the things you do selfishly and try and overcome those, then you'll be coming up against compassion and nonviolence. You will be gentle with others, and you won't have violent thoughts like envy. And similarly, you'll be truthful, because you have more integrity, because you're not stealing. So they all kind of merge into one in the end. But particularly with Asteya, when we look at some of these things we do selfishly, where we put ourselves first and take from others, how can we remedy that? What is the antidote? Excuse me, just give me a sip of water. And one of them is really just to become aware that we're taking from others, that we're putting ourselves first. And the other is to cultivate generosity. And this is actually one of the qualities that's mentioned earlier, later in the Gita, in chapter 16. It talks about one of the qualities, as I say, of a follower who succeeds in the path of yoga is generosity. And in fact, generosity was one of the yamas and niyamas prior to the Yoga Sutras being written. There were 12 and sometimes 20, and generosity was one of them. But now it's kind of lumped in with Asteya as this like an antidote for stealing would be to be generous. And that also comes up in Buddhism. Generosity is a big one in Buddhism, actually. And I remember having a teaching that was, you know, whenever anyone asks you for money, it's such a gift that you must almost go out of your way so that people ask you for stuff so that you can practice your generosity and think to yourself, oh, my goodness, this is such a wonderful experience for me because now I get to practice generosity. So whenever you're feeling like taking someone else's time, then maybe get there early. Be generous with your time. And instead of, you know, skimping your boss on 5 minutes a day, stay late, work late, be generous with your time. Be generous with your compliments. try and be joyful when other people's fortune. and give all your stuff away if you can. So there's a great book, actually, that sort of helps in the practice of Asteya. I'm just trying to find it now. I've forgotten the name. Let's have a look. Well, it's about sort of going through your things and then just giving away. I've forgotten it here, but it's about going through all the things you own and then just giving away what it is that you don't need, what doesn't bring you joy. And that's also a practice of non-attachment, but it can also be about generosity, just putting things out on the street that you don't want, or even that you do want. And it creates a flow of love and energy. It does. And actually, we're going to talk about this a bit later, but the promise of a stayer is abundance. So if you're big on, you know, this sort of new spiritual talk about abundance, then a stayer as a practice is really good for you. So Swami Satchidananda, in his commentary on the Gita, talks about giving and taking, and I really love this as a practice too. So he says, so this follows a sloka of Krishna is talking to Arjuna, and Krishna says, cherished by your spirit of sacrifice, the gods give you everything you want. So the promise is that the more you sacrifice, the more you give, the more you will get. But remember, whoever receives gifts from the gods without offering anything back is a thief. So Swami Satchidananda says here, there are five types of giving and taking, and the Gita gives names to them. If you take 100% and don't give anything in return, you are a thief. If you take 100% and give 50% back, you are a debtor. If you take 100% and give 100%, you're a good business person. That's how business should be done. You give in return for what is received. So if a business person gets $10, he or she should be sure to give $10 worth of goods or services. That's fair business. Next, if you take 50% but give 100%, you are called a righteous person. But if someone takes nothing and gives even 10%, 15%, or 100%, whatever possible, what do you call that person? You call them a yogi. So I love this. Just, or a saint. So we should always examine our transactions and discover in which category we put ourselves. The thief, the debtor, the business person, the righteous person, or the saint. And if you're just one, try to be two. And if you're two, try to be three. And keep promoting yourself and don't stop until the fifth is reached, which I think is such a beautiful way. Because often we go about our daily lives. It's really lovely to think about. We go about our daily lives being very transactional. And we see this in our relationships too. We can be like, well, I emptied the dishwasher today, so you have to empty the dishwasher tomorrow, which would be a good business person and number three. but if you wanted to up your game, then you would empty the dishwasher twice for the every one time your partner did. And if you just really wanted to up your game, you'd empty the dishwasher all the time and never even think about the other person having to repay it. So it's kind of a fun thing to ponder on. Yeah. So the other practice of a stayer is not just about the people in our lives. It's about the earth. So, you know, from the minute we are born into the world, air, food, wood, sunlight, water, help from others, we are on the receiving end of the bounty around us. And and we refer to everything, you know, as like my car and my house and my food. And it's also interesting because it's just given to us when we're here. And obviously, you know, you work hard and you earn money and you get yourself your car or your house or whatever, and you're paying rent. But it's all there. All the resources are there for us to have these things. So a stayer really asks us to start thinking about how we are stealing from the earth. So perhaps, you know, the simplest way to start practice of a stayer with the earth's resources is to just sort of notice, you know, when are we not turning off the lights? And maybe do we need to have as many baths as we do? And again, this isn't about any judgment. It's really just being able to think more about all the times we're taking and how much we are given, which is a really beautiful practice in itself, always thinking about how we are given, how much we're given. And it's interesting, you know, there are lots of stories about when what happens when you take more than you receive. For example, Easter Island. I don't know if you're about Easter Island, but one of the theories of Easter Island is why I ended up with no one there and these big effigies. Oh, you can't hear. Let's see, why would that be? Let me might just type in the room, can you hear me now? Hello? Is that any better? Is anyone else having trouble? Okay. I think it might be you then, Catherine, because other people can hear. So I don't know if you just... hang on, let me type that in because you won't hear it. I'm just typing in to Catherine if she wants to log out and log in again. Okay. Right, so I'll just carry on as other people can hear me. Okay, great. Sure, no worries. We all do it. We all have trouble with power talk every now and again. So what happened on Easter Island, or at least what they inferred was why there were these huge effigies of stone left, was that simply that it became really an amazing civilization, but they used all the resources. And one of, I'm going to say theories because I don't know enough about it to know if it was truth, is that they ended up just surviving on rats. That was all that was left. All the resources are gone. So in the end, you just, you know, you can't always just keep taking and taking. This is one of the message of stay, that you must return what you take. So very easy to practice. And yet, surprisingly, we don't practice, you know, all the time. And that's sort of, you know, reducing carbon footprint, recycling, collecting rainwater, moving to zero waste lifestyle, if you want to take it that far, solar power. But it's also things, you know, like you could repairing our possessions instead of just buying new ones all the time, opening our home to others to share when we're not there. Something that I like to do if I'm away for a weekend. I live in New York and a lot of people like to stay in New York. I just try and always offer around everyone and say, if you want to come and stay, we're not there, please have our home. And it's those things that are really just sort of, you know, a practice of a stayer. So one of the growing movements at the moment that is really around a stayer and the earth is called spiritual ecology. And it's this sort of growing awareness, and it's particularly cropping up in Buddhism, and the Pope has said a few things about it too, in that, you know, we're all interconnected and we're all on this planet. And we have to keep it going, because if you want to become enlightened, you need a planet to be on. And I don't know if that's true. Maybe we'll go to a different planet and have this experience. Who knows? But it's really about sort of growing awareness that a lot of the things that are happening to this planet are because of things that could be helped through a spiritual path. Things like greed or apathy are causing some of the resources to diminish. So a stayer is really beautiful to consider if you're like a real earth lover like myself. It's a lovely practice to engage in. So I just wanted to read you this lovely excerpt from Carl Sagan's book, and it's about it's called The Pale Blue Dot. And I don't know if you know this, but it just helps in my mind to remind us that, you know, we've got one Earth. So let's look after it. So if you don't know, oh yeah, me too. Just I'm glad you're back, Catherine. I love Carl Sagan. He's fantastic. So if you don't know the story about the Pale Blue Dot, Voyager 1 on 1990 was leaving our planetary neighborhood. It was like on the fringes of the solar system. So that's 4 billion miles away. And Carl Sagan encouraged the NASA engineers to turn it around and take a look at our home planet, Earth, and to take a picture of it. So it captures this picture of our planet from 4 billion miles away. And it's called the Pale Blue Dot because the picture is just streaks of light. And then in one of those streaks of light, there is, I would say, even like a pinprick of a pale, pale blue dot that is our Earth. And it's 0.12 pixels in size. And he says this about his experience of looking at the dot. Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you've heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. the aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor, explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there on a mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam. The earth is a very small stage in a vast cosmic arena. Think of the rivers of blood spilled by all those generals and emperors so that in glory and triumph they could become the momentary masters of a fraction of a dot. Think of the endless cruelties visited by the inhabitants of one corner of this pixel on the scarcely distinguishable inhabitants of some other corner. How frequent their misunderstandings, how eager they are to kill one another, how fervent their hatreds. Our posturings, our imagined self-importance, the delusion that we may have some privileged position in the universe are all challenged by this point of pale light. Our planet is a lonely speck in the great enveloping cosmic dark. In our obscurity, in all this vastness, there is no hint that help will come from elsewhere to save us from ourselves. The Earth is the only world known so far to harbor life. There is nowhere else, at least in the near future, to which our species could migrate. Visit, yes. Settle, no. Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand. It has been said that astronomy is humbling and character-building experience. There is perhaps no better demonstration of the folly of human conceits than this distant image of our tiny world. To me, it underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known. And he wrote that in 1994. And I just love that because I really feel that it sort of is echoed in a state, this idea of just, you know, this is all we've got. We've only got one another, so we should stop taking from one another and really just putting back into the world. Just we're 4 billion miles away. If you look at the picture, if you Google it, you'll see the picture, and it's quite something to see. At first, you think it's just a fleck on your screen, and then you realise that's it. That's the pale blue dot. So what do we do then to work in this particular part of Astea when we're thinking about the Earth? And we've mentioned some of the things that we can do on a practical level. But there are two other things, and one is, and it's an overused word, but it's just gratitude. It's waking up every morning and being grateful to take a breath of clean air and to drink water and to have a roof over our heads and to step out into the trees and be grateful for them being there, touch the earth and give our thanks. It's also about cultivating wonder. So the more we can, you know, fall in love with the planet that we're on and the people that are on it. And certainly in Buddhism, you know, we're all interconnected. There's the interdependence. So understanding that we all need to be here. We all have something to give. We all have something to give. Admittedly, you know, some take more than others is the way it goes, but we all have something to give. So just sort of understanding that and being amazed by how humans get on with each other. You know, I live in New York and there are millions of people bumping up against each other every day, and it's a wonder. And sometimes I drive into the city and I see birds coming over the FDR, which goes along the East River, and they sort of swoop in. There's peregrine falcons that nest near Chinatown, and it amazes me just how nature always comes back into urban areas. Like, there's a real sense of wonder. So always, you know, looking out at the stars at night, spending time in nature, allowing yourself to sort of marvel at science and the beauty of maths and equations. And it's also about seeing things as sacred. And this is really where spiritual ecology is going to. And it's certainly something that the Gita talks about a lot, is just recognizing that all of life is sacred. So once you start to live from that point of view, then you really can't sort of take more than you give, because you start to, you know, think about others more and you see their lives as precious and treasured, and you think about the animals and the trees and the planet and the oceans and yourself as well. So you really just in a stay, just practicing a stay, you can really begin to sort of soften a lot of the edges and move into something very, very soft and, say, sort of grateful and giving, this giving place of mind. So another one of the things you can do, like we did at the beginning of our time together, is yajna. So while we can do sort of tangible material things in the world, and even things with our words, as we looked at earlier, we can build people up and offer them compliments. We can also energetically give to the world. And so that's what we do in a yajna. We make this offering of everything we do. And we've talked about this, and the Gita talks about it a lot. If, you know, if you sit down for a meal, just giving thanks to all the people that took part in getting that meal to you, and then offering the energy of that up to others, of, you know, wishing and hoping or sharing that beautiful food with others who may not have food. And in the Buddhist prayers, this is really evident, you know, this, you know, may others be healthy, may others be happy, may others be peaceful. It's very much about sort of getting rid of the selfishness and putting yourself in a position to give to others, to be of service to others, to be generous, to be grateful, to be really expanding. If you can sort of have that essence of a stay, the practice of a stay, really being about becoming expansive rather than drawing inwards and taking with it. So as I mentioned earlier, this promise of a stay is abundance. And that's mentioned in the Yoga Sutras. That if you practice a stay to a T, then everything will come to you. You'll have full abundance. So the way I like to think about abundance is that sometimes when we think about it, we think about abundance. I want abundance. Abundance coming to me. Abundance. I'm here and I'm imagining myself with dollar bills showering on my head and my fridge is full. And this is how we think about abundance. We think of it as this one-way street of stuff coming to us. But actually, abundance is, in my mind, this is how I perceive abundance, a circle. Or a sphere, if you want to call it that. And it's this sphere in that what goes in, or this what goes into the circle, can then be taken out. So we tend to think abundance as, say, of I will be provided for, I will get this. But it's actually, it's we will provide for each other. So it's a growing circle and we each have this role to play. So a stay sort of teaches us that, yes, abundance is ours, because the more we put in and the less we take out, the greater the abundance will be for all. And we are part of the all, so we will benefit from that. But that is not why we do it. Just such a rich yama when we start thinking about that. I know abundance is something that's on everyone's mind, and it's sort of hard to talk to people about abundance when you say, well, you know, you'll get more if you give more away. And they're like, what? How is that possible? But yeah, putting more in means more can be taken out. Okay. And then our final part of asteya is non-stealing from ourselves. And this is, you know, where the rubber really hits the road in our spiritual practice. So, you know, it's all those times we self-sabotage, those like addictions or habits that we just refuse to break, or we can't break, destructive thought patterns that we allow to continue. That would be stealing from ourselves. Instead of just taking a break, we're allowing ourselves just to fall into darkness. And I was thinking about this week, over Thanksgiving, about how a stayer is also, you know, asks us not to avoid. And we are really prone in the society we live in to avoidance through distraction, by distracting ourselves, you know, looking on our phone or clicking on Facebook or reading the news 100 times or drinking or smoking or overeating. And it's all this sort of avoidance, this real sort of aversion. And Asteya really sort of says to us to look into those things that we have an aversion to. So something happened to me at the weekend, and I thought I'd just share this story as an example. It was obviously Thanksgiving, and I was in Ohio with my partner, his mom and his mom's partner, and the next day we were there, it was his 20th high school anniversary high school reunion, and I was going with him because, you know, wanting to be supportive and meet some of the people that are really important to him. His high school and his hometown are really important to him and to many of his friends. So, but I knew how it was going to play out. You know, I know most of them. Oh, Ohio, that's where you are. Oh, well, there you go. This is Youngstown. I knew how it was going to play out. It's a 20th anniversary high school reunion, and everyone's going to be talking about the memories and, oh, Cleveland's not, sorry. I'm going to talk about their memories and stories. And they haven't seen each other in a while, and they want to, wow, we've got Ohio in the house. Someone's from Toledo. We've got Cleveland. I knew I was going to be a bit of a, you know, a gooseberry, and that's fine. I understood this, and I was just going to be supportive. And all his friends are really lovely. I don't know them very well. However, so we arrived, and it starts at 5. And I'm told it may not end till 3 a.m. in the morning. It's going to be long. So we arrive at 5 and to someone's house. There are 30 people there. And I know some of them, so I get to say hi a little bit. And how was your Thanksgiving? And chit-chat, because I don't really know these people. And they're all in there. Oh, my God, this person's here. And did you see this person's here? And obviously, I don't know any of these people. So, you know, I do the usual thing of just go and get a drink. I'm driving, so I'm drinking water and trying to sort of look at the food a bit and stay out of the way so my boyfriend, Bill, can talk to everyone he knows and catch up. And then I kind of run out of things to do, so I just sort of stand there a while. And then we go to the party, and there's 80 people there. And again, there's some people I've met before, so again, small chit-chat. But obviously they're there, and they're looking around the room, they're excited, and they want to talk to people they haven't seen in a long time. So I run to the back and forth to the bathroom, that kills a bit of time. Get something to eat, Bill eats with me. And then he sees someone and off he goes, and I'm sat there, and it's been like 20 minutes and I've just been sat there. And I look at my clock and I look at my clock and it's 7:30. I was like, oh my God, it's only 7:30. This is terrible. What am I going to do? I've got hours and hours of this. So I get up the courage and I go over to another table with someone's wife who I sort of have met before and sit down next to her. And we do a bit more chit chat, but you know, there's only so much I can say. I mean, I don't know Cleveland at all, so I can't even look for common threads to talk about. I check my watch again. It's only 8:30. It's 8:30, and I have this like feeling of just horror, if I can say. There's like this simultaneous feeling of this horror of like, you cannot get out of this. Like, you are here for possibly another 6-7 hours. You have nowhere to go. And this is in my head. Like, I don't even know what to do here. It's so uncomfortable. I feel so awkward. And then at the same time, there's this more positive voice that says, there is nowhere for you to go now. You have to just sit here. So it was this fantastic moment for me because I wasn't drinking. In the past, I would have just quickly had a few drinks, become less inhibited, and then maybe had a dance on the dance floor just to break up, just to be more jolly. I used to smoke a lot as well, and so that was always great for me because if I ever felt uncomfortable or awkward, uncomfortable or awkward, then I would just step outside and have a smoke and probably meet another introvert who was there and chat for a bit and break up some time and then go back and then go out for another cigarette. And that would have got me through these 7 hours of feeling incredibly uncomfortable. And the other thing is, you know, I don't want my boyfriend to look over and see me checking my phone, because that's so rude and he'll feel bad that I'm not having a great time. So I don't look at my phone other than to check the time periodically and see if it's passing. So I just had to sit there. And everyone else is getting more and more drunk and dancing, having a really great time, and watching them was nice. But still, I'm just sat there in this awkwardness, which is entirely of my own ego, as you mentioned. Like, it's just completely my doing. And so what happens is, as I sit there, I start to have to feel stuff. It all has to come up. So it starts with, so someone's written in, it's a good opportunity to just breathe. It was, and I kept trying to remind myself, just breathe. But it all starts coming up. So it's like, well, why couldn't you be more charismatic and charming? You know, you could go out there and mix with some people, for God's sake, you know. Maybe they would be interested in something you had to say. So that starts. And then it's, well, you know, if you're better looking, people might want to come and sit next to you and talk to you. I don't know why that comes up, but that comes up. And then it's like, wow, you know, you're the worst girlfriend in the world because you just sat here in this corner. And you're being selfish because you're not having a great time, when clearly, you know, your partner's, this is a really important night for him. So it just, oh, I can hear it all. And that, and it's, I mean, I'm so lucky that to have done the work I've done or been exposed to the work, because, you know, that those kind of thoughts can really get you down. Or if you're not aware of them, it would just result in having maybe a tantrum and saying, I'm leaving or whatever. But I knew I couldn't. I was driving and I had to drive other people home. So I just had to sit in it for a good 4 hours, had to sit in my own self-hatred, which was horrific, to be honest. There was nothing I could do. But it occurred to me that there are so many ways of distracting ourselves from ever having those kinds of feelings. And if I didn't see how much I hate myself, then I wouldn't be able to work through it. And there are so many tools that we can have in our, you know, abhyasa and our sadhana to help us work through that. And we also sort of, you know, see therapists or journal or do lots of the lovely practices that Regina gives us, like root cause inquiry and I am bad. That's all on her website, by the way. But if I had distracted myself with any of those things that are my usual distractions, quickly check a phone, call someone, I don't know, smoke or drink, eat, shove food in my face, then I would have stolen that opportunity from myself, that opportunity for growth. And so it's very subtle sometimes the way that we sort of sabotage our own spiritual growth. And so one of the things I was thinking about was that really a gift to ourselves through a stayer is to allow ourselves to have these feelings and to encourage ourselves to become aware of when we are not allowing that. So even as you mentioned, it's great to just breathe and have a mantra. But if I just sat there and chanted a mantra for 4 hours, I would have missed this acknowledgement of, like, deep in me is there is some lack of worth and self-hatred and those kind of feelings that come up. And only by looking at them, you know, and acknowledging them and accepting that they're there without judgment, oh, this is in me, can you sort of begin to move through it. Once the light of consciousness sort of hits the darkness, then you can move through it. So that stuff has to come up and be moved out. And that's sort of the expansion that a stayer really asks us to do. And of course, a mantra would be great to chant just to put me in a frame of mind that allowed me to sit in that state. But I wasn't quite that far gone. So a stayer, actually, when you think about it, is about, like, at the deepest level, on a deep, deep spiritual level, it's about self-love. It's about it's about being this gift to the world. And I talked about this expansion earlier. And so one of the things, one of the tools I sort of discovered from this experience this weekend was that when resistance, I can feel it, and I'm fortunate enough to feel it. And, you know, with practice, you end up feeling it quicker and quicker. When you feel this resistance, when you feel the closing off and the discomfort and the awkwardness and the twitching within you to do something else. And for me, it's often read the news or do Facebook. Those are my normal twitches. or check a text or an email or something. Actually, Estes sort of says to us, when you feel that resistance, realize that you are not expanding in that moment. You are actually closing off or even coming in. So if you can sort of see that you're taking at that point, you're like drawing inwards rather than offering outwards. And then when you feel that, that's the time to sort of sit down and give yourself a timeout and just see if you can explore those feelings and sort of shed light on some of the things that are coming up for you. And then through doing that, you know, as I mentioned, you can all types of help and prayer and journaling and inquiry that you can do to work through that. And we're actually going to talk about this later in some of the other yamas and niyamas touch on. And like things like non-attachment and getting rid of, you know, these bad feelings that we often have, or getting rid might be too strong. But in this way, you know, as we talked about, how can we be generous? It's also, you know, really like a stereo is how can we be generous with ourselves? And the answer is just by allowing ourselves to be, by allowing all this stuff to come up, by really just giving ourselves the time to look within and see the shadows and the darkness without all the distractions, and just allow them to be and let them move through. So let me see if I have anything else that I want to add. No, I think that's it. I mean, also the other thing about self-love, and let's say that's something that's huge, and you can't just start loving yourself. That's a lot of sort of work at breaking through barriers. Is that when you start to move through these things, that you become a gift to the world. You become like this expansive gift where you're putting into the world, because you then start living from your joy. And so instead of sabotaging yourself and having all these negative thought patterns that you're entertaining, and instead of, you know, really delving down into the root of them, you're just sort of numbing yourself in some way to them. You're missing out on what your potential is, and the world needs your potential, and other people need your potential, and you taking suffering out of the world, it's fantastic, because then there's less suffering in the world. So focusing on yourself in this way, and this gift to yourself through a stay, is really beautiful. It's like abundance in action. So yeah, that is a stay. So lots of different practices and things to think about. I mean, the yamas, you could sort of, every time I think about them, there's something else that pops up. They're like a box in a box in a box in a box. So hopefully not too overwhelming, but maybe some practices you can put into your daily lives. So it's 9:24, and I thought just to end, I would play a song. And this is Jai Jagdish, who I just love. And it's called The Light of Love. And it's a little long, so I'm going to shut it off at 9:30. But if you all take a break, then I'll just say namaste, and I hope you have a blessed week right now. Yeah, and next Monday, someone's asked if I could share about my personal journey. Happy to share a bit more about that. Next Monday, we'll be talking about Brahmacharya, which is a very juicy one. So until then, I'll leave you with a light of love, and then we'll hop out at 9:30. So we can have the rest of the evening's teachings. Okay, blessings to you all.
Stumble into beauty, recognizing that it's me. will open up my heart and surrender unto thee.
Open up my heart and surrender.